Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, the voice for patient safety, where each week we delve into little-known healthcare and hospital hazards, as well as other fringe topics that affect your health and well-being. I'm so happy you've taken the time to join me, and today I have lots to share with you. So, let's dig right in, shall we? Today's guest is quite special, and the topic is not a commonly discussed health issue, and I'm talking about the negative health effects being driven by hospitals, a supposed place of healing, and their blind acceptance and use of electromagnetic fields, microwave frequencies emitted by wireless technology. Our guest today is Cindy Sage, the co-editor and principal author of the Bioinitiative Reports, both in 2007 and 2012, and a founder of the International Bioinitiative Working Group. The Bioinitiative Report is the report on the relationship between the electromagnetic fields associated with power lines and wireless devices and health, and is available on our website, speakupandstayalive.com, and I really encourage you to become familiar with the findings. Let me tell you a bit about Cindy. She is the owner of Sage Associates in Santa Barbara, California. Sage Associates is an internationally known environmental sciences consulting firm. Cindy's specialty area of practice is the science and public health effects of electromagnetic fields and radio frequency radiation, non-ionizing radiation. Well, I am so pleased and honored to have this conversation today. So welcome to our show, Cindy.
Pat, it's really my pleasure, and thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Well, Cindy, as soon as you agreed to be on the show, we sent an email blast to our listeners and our followers asking them to send us their most pressing questions regarding EMF safety as it relates to healthcare and hospital stays. So with your permission, I'd like to format our time together by sharing some of those listeners' questions with you.
It's fine with me, and Pat, I want your listeners to know that I actually prepared an outline of talking points and things that I thought we could cover. But this morning when I saw the questions, I realized they were so excellent, I'd much rather answer questions, you know, than make a presentation. But what I'd like for people to know is that in response to these questions, there's really a lot of reference material and good, solid scientific and public health backup, which we want them to have confidence that these answers that they're going to get are really based in a lot of research.
Thank you for that. And if you send me all of those references, with your permission, we'll also post that on our website so folks can follow up as they wish.
We'll figure a way to do that.
We will. All righty. All right. Well, now, first, before we get into the questions, for those who may be finding us for the first time or for those who aren't so familiar with electromagnetic fields and microwave frequencies, can you give us a quick lesson? What are they and why are they hazardous to our health?
There are several kinds of electromagnetic fields. The EMF term is sort of the broad umbrella term. Within that, we have the power frequency fields, 50 and 60 hertz, that come from all things electric. They're the electric fields and magnetic fields that come from things that have motors, things that are wired, things that use electricity. And there are lots of those in hospitals that we want to talk about. They take a certain kind of a meter to measure, and they're a standalone piece of our conversation. The other part of our conversation is about radio frequency, microwave signals that are basically the product of all these new wireless technologies. People know them, you know, from cell phones and cordless phones, but in a hospital or healthcare setting, they're becoming, I mean, we are now seeing the mass deployment of radio frequency wireless gadgets and monitors and sensors of every kind. And both of these exposures are today listed as possible human carcinogens. This is a formal World Health Organization IARC listing. So there's a great collision coming between this sort of premature rollout of wireless technologies, particularly in healthcare settings, and the health effects they cause. So we need to talk about this and whether or not we have informed consent about it and whether people know about it.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's why I appreciate your being here. And I'm going to start out our conversation with my own observation/question. Why are hospitals allowing cell towers or these cellular repeaters to be installed on the top of their buildings?
Well, Pat, I've had the same experience in hospitals that I visited, and we've also done consulting in some hospitals for electromagnetic interference. So it's common to see. Now, the rollout of these and, you know, the hospitals leasing, you know, space to cell carriers really started around in the early 2000s, and by 2006 or 7, they were everywhere. I think this probably in part predates widespread knowledge about the potential for health effects. So that's a part, but it certainly doesn't explain or justify the continued leasing of these sites, because they're in a direct conflict to healthcare. Being under them probably is less bad than being in a building adjacent to where they're mounted on a roof. So that's one point of view. And nevertheless, what you are seeing defines the problem. We shouldn't be putting patients, nor should we be putting healthcare workers in these exposures. They're excessive.
Thank you. And this next question kind of speaks also, because I had the same experience as well. It's from a gal, Mandy, in Phoenix. She said, my son and daughter-in-law just had a baby, and the hospital insisted on attaching an RFID tag, that's the radio frequency ID tag, to her little leg. The reason, in case of a kidnapping, is the medical risk worth the minuscule odds of someone snatching the child and running? In other words, are these RFID frequencies safe?
Well, I think that this is just a really bad choice for a very remote possibility for a child. If you look at one hospital, it's really quite good in California, where I was able to look at the RF emissions from these RFID tags. The child wears one, the mother wears one, and there's one on nurses, and then there's a sensor somewhere, you know, on that floor. And the range of these RFID, and these are radio frequency identification tags, RFID stands for that. They have a range of 30 to 50 feet to the RFID reader that's on that floor. Now, that tells me that as a system is logging all activities of the child with the RFID tag at 30 to 50 feet distance, that's too strong an emitter to be on a child, certainly in the unaided. And really not warranted in this case. I mean, there just isn't enough risk, and people should be paying attention. And there are many other ways of looking toward prevention of that problem.
Right. I mean, just because we have the ability to do something doesn't mean that we have to do it.
That's so right. And I think, you know, as a basic concept for everyone listening, you have to think about the layering up of radio frequency.
Yes.
The number of ways in which wireless is being introduced into medical technology, telemetry, surveillance monitoring, and then even at the checkout, you know, all of the patient electronic recordings, all of these things are new, and they are additive. So the actual cumulative exposure is enormous. So we have an enormous disconnect. We have a mass rollout of unnecessary and risky technology and absolutely no informed consent.
Right. And this is going to translate as well to homes and the wireless baby monitors. I just want to throw that out there as well. If they're dangerous in the hospital, they're dangerous at the home as well.
Yeah, they're dangerous. Baby monitors, electronic baby monitors, are so strong an RF signal. They should never be placed in a crib or in the room of a child. They really shouldn't be used. But,
right.
You know, the other issue with that, of course, is that there have been many, you know, high-profile examples recently of hackers actually hacking into the wireless systems, you know, within homes that are maintained wirelessly, where a child can be seen. A child can be seen in a crib, and there can be two-way communication. And people who want to rob a home or simply terrorize a child can do so. And the parents monitor, if it's not being, you know, actively monitored, could miss this. So we believe that the ability to hack these systems is also a real concern.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Mike from Ohio sent this. He said, Pat, I've heard that the frequencies given off my wireless devices contribute to fertility and reproductive problems. Please ask your guest about this.
Mike from Ohio is correct. The evidence is just snowballing. I would first say, look at the Chapter 18 in the 2012 Bioinitiative Report, which is a very extensive review, particularly for male fertility, for sperm quality, for sperm motility, sperm viability. It turns out that a man who is wearing a cell phone on his belt, even on standby, may be creating, is likely to be creating, health impacts to sperm that are irreversible and lead to mutations that may in fact be one of the factors we should be looking at for, you know, this epidemic rise in autism and ADHD. We know sperm are subject to oxidative stress or oxidative damage, and this is one of the hallmarks of radiofrequency and ELF, you know, non-ionizing radiation from wireless devices and other electric things. So we've known that for a long time. But now that men are keeping a phone in the pocket on, even when it's not transmitting a conversation, being subjected to these spikes in radio frequency as the cell is trying to communicate to, you know, stay in touch with the nearest cell tower appears to be enough to damage sperm DNA. And the sperm has no DNA repair capacity, unlike, I think, every other cell of the body. So once damaged, they're damaged. So it's a great concern for men and fertility. And obviously, the prevention here is to think about turning your cell phone off, completely off. Don't put it on a belt for long periods. Don't carry it in your pocket. Don't carry it on your body. Take it out and use it when you want to check in. And if you have to have it on, put it 3 or 4 or 5 feet away from you on a desk or the seat of your car. It's a great concern. And I would invite people who might be more research-oriented to look at some of the papers that actually show photographs of sperm samples that have been exposed to cell phone radiation where their tails are all deformed and they're sticking together. They're wrapping like mats of grass, how the authors have described it. And, you know, these little swimmers are supposed to swim quick to the egg individually, and if they're all sticking together in these big mats, they're not going anywhere,
right.
And they're damaged.
Right.
Preventable, absolutely preventable.
Just some common sense solutions as well. And for women, I think there's many studies that also show that it affects the production of eggs and that can last for generations.
First of all, the ovum or the egg does not, you know, it has DNA repair capacity, so it appears to be a little bit more resilient than sperm. That's one thing I think we know clearly. But the real risk is for women. Now, think of a nurse or a doctor or a woman who's pregnant. The miscarriage rate from being exposed to 16 milligauss intermittently or over, 16 milligauss ELF or more on an intermittent basis is a miscarriage risk, about a 4-fold or 4.5-fold increased risk. So we think about miscarriage more for women with respect to a wireless device that has a battery that switches on and off, and these batteries can create ELF kicks of certainly more than 16 milligauss, up in the 100 milligauss.
Yeah.
When you get an email or you know, when you're talking and it's on speakerphone. So that is something that women need to take into account. Any woman, not just healthcare workers, but any woman who uses a cell phone and wears it. Now, there's another facet to this, and we have to consider men and women, and then we have to consider the developing fetus, because the mother who uses a cell phone during pregnancy, in some published studies, we're seeing both in animal studies and human studies that in utero exposure for the fetus can lead to altered fetal brain development. And the way that that's exhibited is that by the time that child is in elementary school, they have more problems with learning and behavior. We are seeing the effects of cell phone radiation during pregnancy, altering fetal brain development in mice and in human children, in the fetus, leading to problems later on. So we really don't want women to be using wireless or exposing themselves to wireless during pregnancy or pre-pregnancy. And for men, we want them to be reducing or eliminating their wireless exposures while they're trying to conceive, and perhaps months before that.
Right.
If you know, it's sort of like parents who, they do everything else when they're thinking about having a child to be safe. This is one more thing on the list.
Yep, yep. Excellent advice. I would say the precautionary principle is warranted here. Well, I'm glad we're getting this word out. All right. Well, let's move on. Nick, the male nurse, sent this. According to Samuel Milham, author of a new alarming study, he says there is a link between obesity and exposure to dirty electricity, and that's a form of electromagnetic field pollution. Is this why all the nurses in my hospital are overweight? In other words, is there a link between man-made frequencies and weight gain due to stress on the body?
Here's what we know about it. Sam Millam is certainly an expert on the dirty electricity issue, and by that we mean the low kilohertz frequency fields that come from compact fluorescent bulbs and the on-off, on-off, on-off radio frequency pollutant that's kicked out every time you walk through an environment that's rich in, you know, computers and printers and all the things, you know, that have variable speed motors. So hospitals are obviously a place very rich in that kind of dirty electricity environment. Dirty electricity has been shown in some studies to affect blood sugar and insulin. Mm. And that is the clue that tells you if you're dysregulating blood sugar and insulin function in people, and you're doing it on a chronic basis in a work setting where people come in 4, 5, 6 days a week and there are many hours, these people are going to have the kinds of exposures that we would link to blood sugar abnormalities. Getting rid of dirty electricity by filtering of electricity or power quality is the answer to that, and it should be on everyone's radar. There is also some evidence from researchers that mothers who are exposed to extremely low-frequency fields or magnetic fields during pregnancy tend to have obesity problems in their offspring. So there's a little bit of reinforcing evidence. But again, this is one of those things people are just beginning to look at. It's a maybe.
Okay. All right. Something just to give some thought to.
Right.
Maybe not for the obesity aspect of it, but from so many other health aspects of it as well. All right. I've been to so many hospital seminars and been speaking at hospitals lately, and every breakout session surrounds about the use of wireless technology. Rounding with iPads is all exciting, and it's so counterproductive to what we're supposed to be doing in a hospital, and that's healing people. And it's not just the patient that are at risk. Now your healthcare staff is at extreme risk of even keeping you safe. So
yeah. I get calls from people who say their family members, the spouse cannot accompany, you know, the husband who's the heart attack victim to the hospital because she's already become electrically sensitive.
Yes.
What a cruel thing. That family at a time, you know, in life that is such a critical time to provide, you know, family and spousal support. And there are some people today who physically cannot, neurologically cannot handle the exposures they would get going into a hospital. It's not in the mind. This is in the body.
Yes.
This is a neurological effect. It's an effect on the immune system, you know, cardiovascular system. So people with medical and metal implants are particularly at risk in these environments where they must go either for treatment or to accompany a family member. When you draw back, Pat, and you think, well, why are we in this situation? This mass rollout or deployment of wireless has been driven largely by companies that see a spin-off kind of gizmo or gadget that sounds good, but for the RF health effects. And they're being funded and they're being commercialized so fast we can hardly keep track of them. And because they can legitimately say, well, we comply with FCC standards, and they, you know, inevitably they do comply, they're legal. They're just harmful. And until we have new biologically based standards that relate to where people begin to get sick, okay, they can't think straight, which is, you know, are thousands of times lower than these current FCC public safety limits, then we have no break on the deployment other than by complaining or rejecting, you know, treatment and treatment environments that are so rich in RF.
And that's kind of a frightening answer. A couple voices here and there is not going to make the difference, you know.
Yeah. You know, I interviewed a healthcare professional, a physician's assistant, this morning, and asked her to describe a typical day to try to say this is now, you know, the common experience of the healthcare worker, and what is there at work there, and how is it affecting people, and who's driving it. And at the very end of this conversation, which is really enlightening, she said to me that, you know, our patients are demanding wireless. It's not just the hospital administrators. They are, in fact, often responding to people in labor and delivery, for example, that want wireless to keep, you know, everybody out in the waiting room knowledgeable and family and so on knowledgeable. Their patient demands to be portable. For example, mothers in labor and delivery, they want to wear wearable, you know, baby monitors because they want to walk around. Well, that's not a good offset. If they knew the risk, they probably wouldn't do it. If they knew that their labors might be extended, their contractions interfered with, their you know, all of those things are interference with a normal cycle. So if they knew that, I think they probably wouldn't be opting for it. But, you know, for hospitals that are having robots, for example, for telemedicine, and they do at the hospital, you know, where this woman works, they have no psych and no neurology in that emergency room, but they have telemedicine where they use a robot and a video screen. And, of course, all of that is wireless. Now, the telemetry demands in hospitals is very large. And, you know, all of the printers that print out your discharge papers, your prescriptions, your medical administration reports, your Morris reports, all the patient documents are printed wirelessly.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the urgent care centers now are going to iPads, for example, in Berkeley.
Right.
They chart only on iPads, and the people who go in there think it's a really modern, good place to get medicine because they have access to Wi-Fi as well because it was demanded.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with patient care, but it's the cosmetic appearance that it's modern.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have a lot of patient education to do, as well as, you know, medical hospital administrator, hospital board education to do in this. I've always said that in my writings on this, that we need to educate at all these levels, and that once we have done it, people will start making choices not to have iPads near new moms so they can bond with their infants in NICUs. You know, I mean, these are ideas that sound good, but they just aren't.
Right, right. Well, hopefully conversations like this will help bring it out at least to the patient side, and maybe then they can refuse some of these things. Because I wish a lot of these nurses knew about this, and maybe we need to work to get the word out to them as well, because they would be excellent resources to reach out to the hospital and say, you know what, I can't work under these circumstances. What can we do to lessen this so that I can remain healthy and do my job effectively? Well, we could go on and on here, but so can you tell us where we can learn more about you and what you do?
Bioinitiative.org is the really important central repository for all of the science in public health. And it's written both for the layperson in the beginning, and then all the technical, you know, the hard science stuff is all in the back. It is where we want you to go to understand these issues.
And it's just a pleasure to have you with us today. I really, really appreciate your taking the time.
Thanks, Pat.
Is your home stressing you out? Are your appliances and gadgets damaging your health? Scientific evidence suggests that everyday chronic low-intensity magnetic field exposure poses a possible health risk. And what about the radiation levels from wireless computers, routers, cordless phones, baby monitors? So I'm suggesting that you have a healthy home consultation to identify problem areas in your home. The folks at Healthy Home will test the EMF levels in your home using small, specialized equipment, focusing particularly on areas of the home where you spend most time. And then we'll make recommendations about how you can reduce your exposure and minimize the effects on your health. It takes about an hour, and you will be given a comprehensive report that includes full recommendations on how to reduce the negative impacts of EMFs and turn your home into a healthy, healing, and safe environment. Schedule a Healthy Home consultation today, and I'll come too to meet you and share what I know about healthy homes. Call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. And remember, a healthy home is a happy home.
I'd like to take a moment and share two of my friends with you who air their podcasts on the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, speakuptalkradio.com. Both are no strangers to speaking up. First today is Jana Panaritis, who knows quite a lot about advocating for the elderly because caregiving is her specialty. Here she is.
Hi, I'm Jana Panaritis, host of the AgeWise podcast, where we talk about aging in a different way. We hear from professionals in the field and people like you, unsung heroes caring for family members, friends, and relatives amid the demands of your own life. Join me each week as we laugh, cry, and share. And know you're not alone. Listen to a brand new episode every week at speakuptalkradio.com. To learn more about the show, visit the AgeWise website. That's AgeWYZ.com.
And the next woman who airs on Speak Up Talk Radio is Gina Murphy Darling, who advocates for living clean and green. And as she says, she doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. Take a listen.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I would love for you to become a part of my world. Mrs. Green's world is an engaged international community and a global movement of ideas and action made up of people who truly care about their own health and the health of this great planet of ours. In Mrs. Green's world, we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Our guests from all over the world will give you plenty of things to think about. Please visit my website at mrsgreensworld.com and become a part of our world.
Well, these are two wonderful people who see the value in getting out there in an attempt to make this world a better place. Speaking up certainly is the first step to creating positive change. And you can find more powerful hosts and podcasts at speakuptalkradio.com. Wow. Once again, we're out of time. I don't know how that happened so quickly, but we are not out of plenty to talk about. So come back next week, where you can find us every Saturday morning at 9 o'clock in Cleveland, Ohio, at WHKW, that's AM 1220, and WHKZ, AM 1440, as well as Sunday evening in Cleveland at 6 o'clock at WHK, that's AM 1420. We're also online at iHeartRadio. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes or just visit two websites, speakupandstayalive.com or speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I'm happy you shared today with me, and I hope you come back next week. So until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, the voice for informed choice. Whether looking to sell your home at top market value or searching for your dream home at a competitive price, the McCaskey team can help. As the top producing real estate team in Geauga County and Northeast Ohio, the McCaskey team knows what it takes to guide you through the home buying and selling process. How do I know this? They sold my mom's home in less than a week, so I have firsthand experience. They are a part of RE/MAX Traditions, so give my friends, Dan or Terry, the opportunity to help you too. They're located on Chardon Square at 139 Main Street. Give them a call, 440-773-5542. That is 440-773-5542. Or visit their website, McCaskeyTeam.com. That's McCaskeyTeam.com. McCaskeyTeam.com.